10. Imposing in size, coloration, and carriage, Commander Tla paced back and forth at the foot of the rough-hewn command platform at the heart of Harar's ship. Dangling from the points of his broad shoulders, the commander's long campaign cloak swished as he swung to face the priest and Nom Anor.
"Destroying the spawn ship was a profligate act," Tla bellowed. "You should have found some other way to place Aelon in their hands."
"Other stratagems might have proved even more costly in the long run," Harar countered. "As it was, the crew of the spawn ship went willingly to their deaths, content to be ennobled by the importance of the sacrifice."
Tla cast an angry glance at his tactician. Promoted in the wake of Shaddao Shai's death on Ithor, Tla wore his rank like a scowl.
"All respects, Eminence Harar," Raff said, "but this isn't some game that can be decided by cleverness. We're waging a holy war."
"Ah, but any war is always a game of sorts. We needed to make certain that Aelon's flight from us appeared credible."
Tla scoffed.
"You're newly arrived in this arena, priest. You don't give the infidels enough credit. They will lay your artifice bare before long."
"Indeed. Would it surprise you to learn that Aelon has already been taken into protective custody?"
Tactician Raff showed Harar a dubious look.
"I would advise you not read too much into that, Eminence. Aelon is the first of us they have managed to capture alive."
"Of course, but the point is that I know where she is, and I know where she is to be taken next."
Tla turned skeptically to Nom Anor.
"Is this the doing of your dupes and agents, Executor?"
Nom Anor smiled faintly, but shook his head.
"Unfortunately, no, Commander."
"Then how do you know?"
Tla demanded. Harar motioned to one of his acolytes, who carried forward, as one might a newborn, a light brown and slightly oblate villip. Carefully, Harar took the villip into his hands, then cradled it in his left arm.
"Aelon's captors were beguiled enough to bring this little one's twin along with Aelon. It has been most dutiful in reporting back to us."
Harar stroked the villip's ridge with his three-fingered right hand.
"Come, little one, repeat what you told me earlier."
Commander Tla and the tactician moved closer in interest. The puckered tissue at the center of the nubby ridge expanded, and the villip began to turn inside out. Fully averted, the creature did its best to mimic Aelon's comely features.
"Wayland," the creature said. "Wayland."
Slowed by braking thrusters, the civilian shuttle Segway coursed above the craggy northeastern uplands of Wayland's principal continent. Dense, canopied forest cloaked the southern slopes of now-truncated Mount Tantus. But to the east lay vast areas denuded by the seismic explosion that had destroyed Emperor Palpatine's storehouse more than 15 years earlier. One of three passengers in the shuttle, Belindi Kalenda, NRI's deputy director of operations, pressed her face to the window to soak in as much of the view as possible. As the shuttle continued to descend, a small city came into view at the base of the mountain.
"I'm shocked," Kalenda remarked to her seatmate. "I was picturing New Nistau as little more than a hamlet."
Slim and dark-complected, with widely spaced eyes and a husky voice, she had been with NRI for only 12 years, but her success in foiling a dangerous conspiracy in the Corellian system had resulted in rapid advancement. Xenobiologist Joy Eycroft leaned toward the window to have a look.
"It started out that way. Now there are close to 10,000 living in the immediate area. Mynirshi, Poseidons, and humans, in addition to the 500 or so Nogri that founded the place."
"And everyone gets along?"
"So far."
Kalenda laughed, mostly to herself. The Nogri despise anything related to Palpatine, but they're fine living on a world he named.
"It has never been documented that Wayland was Palpatine's code name for the planet," Dr. Yintal said from the seat behind the two women. "I submit that human colonists conceived the appellation
long before the Emperor decided to use Mount Tantus as a treasure vault. An analyst for fleet intelligence, Yintol was a small, pensive man, and the suddenness of his outburst prompted Kalenda and Eycroft to exchange secret smiles of amusement.
"And where else would the Nogri get to pile dirt on anything that belonged to Palpatine, right, Doc?"
Eycroft asked over her shoulder. "That's certainly a contributing factor to their contentment with the arrangements," he observed coolly. The shuttle circled, then settled down on a landing pad in the center of New Nistau. The three passengers gathered their belongings and waited at the hatchway. Wayland greeted them with resplendent, light and crisp, sweet-smelling air. A hodgepodge of wattle huts, wooden buildings, and stone mansions, the burgeoning city reflected its mix of cultures. Perplexing, however, was the profusion of hotels and ethnic restaurants that surrounded the landing pad. Kalenda was about to quiz Eycroft when Major Showalter arrived on the scene, perched atop an old Soro Sub Corvair landspeeder. Out of passenger compartments, missing their folding access panels, climbed two Nogri. Showalter was sporting tinted driver's goggles and a locally purchased poncho. He saluted Kalenda and shook hands with Eycroft and Yintol. Then he introduced everyone to Mobvikar and Kokkrame of Clan Hakkar, who were attached to NRI's safe house. The pleasant sunshine did little to soften the savage brawn and vampiric hideousness of the gnomish gray beings. Kalenda peered dubiously into the passenger compartment of the battered landspeeder.
"Is there room for all of us in this thing?"
"I thought we'd walk," Showalter said, making it sound like a question. "It's not far." Kalenda made an ushering motion with her hand.
"Lead on, Major."
The Nogri insisted on carrying the bags. The narrow press-bonded lanes were crowded with spindly Menirshi, armored Posadans, humans, and Nogri, but interspersed among them were small groups of Bims, Fallen, Bothans, and other species, lingering in front of hotels or sipping drinks at street-side cafe tables. Baffled, Kalenda finally asked about it.
"A serendipitous result of the Devil Agreement," Showalter said while they walked. "The agreement stipulated that any works of art, formerly the property of Palpatine, found in or around Mount Tantus, can be reclaimed by the cultures that produced them. Ever since it was put into effect, curators and acquisition types from hundreds of worlds have been coming here to retrieve artifacts that survived the explosion and have since been discovered in the course of New Nistau's expansion. Off-worlders need to be housed and fed, of course. So hotels and restaurants started springing up, which in turn has led to the growth of the town.
And to the discovery of yet more cultural artifacts," Yintol added. Showalter nodded. "Treasure hunters have become as common as vine snakes." As the NRI team neared the Nogri section of the settlement, the primitive dwellings of the Minirshi and the rock fortresses of the Posadans gave way to basic but well-constructed huts of lumber and stone. The village had been transplanted from Honegger after the official raising of Mount Tantus had commenced. A short but steep uphill walk brought them to an inconspicuous Nogri-style dwelling, nestled against the mountainside and shaded by flowering trees. Mobvikar and Kokkrame stationed themselves outside, while Showalter escorted everyone else into a sparsely furnished, windowless front room. "The back door opens onto one of the tunnels that honeycomb Tantus," the Major explained. "About as hardened a sight as you'll find between Wayland and Borlias." He gestured to a side room. "Our would-be defectors in here. We've got the other one, the pet, stashed downstairs."
"Is that her term or yours?" Eycroft asked.
Showalter turned to her. What she actually said was familiar. The four operatives entered the side room, where the Yuuzhan Vong female was sitting in a meditative posture on a pillow she'd borrowed from the cot. In place of the exotic garb, she was wearing the 2D opticals Kalenda had seen,
Aelan was now attired in drawstring trousers and a hooded overshirt. Though outlandishly tattooed, she was even more striking and statuesque in person than she looked in the photos. Her oblique eyes, a vivid blue, snapped open and darted from face to face. "Aelan, these are some of my associates," Showalter said smoothly. She glared at him. "Where is Vergere?"
"Downstairs, eating when I last saw her."
"You've deliberately separated us."
"Just for the time being."
"What is Vergere to you, Aelan?" Eycroft said, moving to the cot and sitting down.
"She is my familiar."
Kalenda and Eycroft traded brief glances. "We understand the term, but perhaps in a different context. Do you mean that Vergere is something more than a companion?" Kalenda asked.
"She is that as well."
"So, an aide and a comrade?"
"She is not a comrade. She is a familiar."
Aelan rearranged herself on the pillow.
"You've come to test me further?"
Kalenda sat down alongside Eycroft.
"Just a few questions."
"Questions your despicable scanners and analyzers failed to answer?" Aelan smiled maliciously. "How can machines be expected to communicate with a living being?"
Kalenda forced a smile. "Suppose we consider this a means of getting acquainted."
"We Yuuzhan Vong have no such protocols. We know who others are. We wear who we are." She ran her fingertips across her patterned cheeks. "What you see reflects what is inside. You are fools to suspect that I am other than what my face and body declare me to be. Why do you refuse to grant me political asylum?"
"The Yuuzhan Vong would accept one of us without question," Yintal countered.
Aelan looked hard at him. "Where doubt or suspicion exist, we have the breaking."
"What is the breaking?"
Yintal asked, clearly intrigued.
"An expedient way of arriving at the truth."
Eycroft waited for Aelan to go on, but instead Aelan fell silent.
"You say that you wear who you are. Are you referring to your body markings?"
"Markings?" Aelan repeated with unconcealed revulsion.
"I am a priestess of Yun Harla."
She touched her broad forehead, then her cleft chin.
"This is Yun Harla's forehead. This is her chin. These are not markings. I am elite."
"Why would an elite desert her people?" Yintal asked bluntly. Aelan narrowed her eyes in apparent deliberation.
"There is dissension. Not all Yuuzhan Vong believe that we should have journeyed across the void to come here. As many believe that this war is not one the gods wish. Because I am a priestess of the high arts, I would have you see the light in other ways."
"You don't condone the mass murder and sacrifices that have characterized your campaign so far?" Kalenda said. Aelan turned to her.
"Sacrifice is essential to existence. We Yuuzhan Vong sacrifice ourselves as often as we do infidels. Whether or not your galaxy is the chosen land, it must be purified to be made habitable."
She paused briefly.
"Death is not what we wish for you, however. Only that you accept the truth."
"The truth as revealed by your gods," Eycroft said leadingly.
"The gods,"
Aelan corrected her. Yintal made a sound of disdain.
"You're not a priestess. You're an espionage agent, a pretender. The ship you jettisoned from was destroyed much too easily."
Aelan's eyes flashed. "Vergere and I had already concealed ourselves in the escape pod when the battle began. We didn't know the ship would be destroyed. Our launch was fortuitous." "Even if that's true, why would your military leaders deploy such a small warship against our own when a much larger ship was in the vicinity?" Aelan sneered at him.
"Should I judge you by size, little man? The smaller ship was the more well-armed of the two. Why else would the larger have fled with the destruction of its spawn?"
Yintal looked at Kalenda and Eycroft. "She's lying." Aelan sighed wearily.
"You are a suspicious species. I've come to do good."
In what way, Aelon? Kalenda asked.
You must take me to the Jedi. I can supply information about the malady.
Yintal stepped closer to Aelon and appraised her openly. What does a priestess know about disease? She shook her head.
It is not a disease. It is a reaction to the Coombe spores. The Jedi will know.
Why can't you simply tell us? Kalenda said.
Why is it so important that you meet with the Jedi?
Aelon sharpened her gaze.
Tell them what I have told you, and they will understand.
Yintal paced away from her, then whirled. We need proof that you've come as a benefactor and not as a spy. Aelon spread her arms wide.
You see me. What more proof can I offer?
Yintal tightened his lips and squatted before her.
Military data.
Aelon's face clouded over with perplexity.
Is that what you wish?
Give us something we can take to our superiors, Kalenda urged. If what you give us can be corroborated, we might be able to do as you request and arrange a meeting with the Jedi. Aelon considered it for a moment.
My order works closely with the warriors to assure that the auguries are advantageous. We forecast which tactics to employ.
Then tell us where your fleet will strike next, Yintal demanded. Name the world. Aelon had her mouth open to respond when a crashing sound issued from the front room, followed by muffled shouting in Basic and Hanagran. While Kalenda and Ikroth were rising from the cot, a tall, powerfully built man slammed into the door jamb and fell to the floor, but quickly regained his footing. Dressed in spacer's garb, he stood swaying in the doorway for a moment, taking in the room. Blood seeped through rips in his jumpsuit and ran from slashes that crisscrossed his face. Eyes fixed on Aelon, he wedged the forefinger of his right hand into the crease aside his right nostril and launched a blood-curdling Yuuzhan Vong scream to the ceiling.
Doro Ik Vong Prat!
Then several things happened at once. As if possessed of a will of its own, the man's skin peeled back from his face, revealing a macabre, misshapen mask of whorls and undulating lines. Undercurrent to his scream, ripping and popping sounds emanated from beneath his clothing. Then two torrents of gelatinous muck poured from his pants legs, consolidated into one mass, and streaked away like an animated oil slick. Aelon leapt to her feet and reared back against the wall, hissing and snarling at the intruder and curving her long fingers into claws.
"Assassin!" she shrieked through bared teeth. "They found me!"
Yintal swung around and stepped in front of the assassin, only to take a backhand to the face that snapped his neck like a twig. The small man flew clear across the room, colliding with Showalter and dropping him to the floor. The assassin was preparing to throw himself at Aelon when he was suddenly attacked from behind by Mobvikar and Kakrame, their sinewy limbs and lumpy craniums displaying scarlet bruises and wounds. The two Nogri drove the Yuuzhan Vong forward into the side wall of the hut, narrowly missing Aelon, who ducked at the last moment and rolled herself under the cot. The Yuuzhan Vong met the wall face first with bone-shattering force, and for a moment it seemed that he would succumb to the Nogri's slashing assault. All at once, however, he straightened, propelling the two commandos off him with such power that they sailed to the far sides of the room, crashing into opposite walls and collapsing to the floor. The Yuuzhan Vong whipped around, flinging blood in all directions, his closely set eyes searching the room. Barreling between Kalenda and Ikroth, whom he toppled like rag dolls, he overturned the cot with one hand and grabbed hold of Aelon with the other. His fingers viced around the priestess's long neck, and he lifted her off her feet and pressed her to the wall. At the same instant, Mobvikar regained consciousness. Powerful legs launching him off the floor, he caught the assassin around the waist and sank his teeth into the enemy's back. The Yuuzhan Vong howled. Swinging a flailing Aelon to one side, he used his free fist to rain hammer blows on the Nogri fastened to him. Mobvikar grunted and moaned as the air was driven from his lungs, but he clung tenaciously to his prey. Dazed, Kalenda struggled to her feet, gave her head a clearing shake, then leapt onto the assassin's pumping arm, which she rode up and down for a moment until the Yuuzhan Vong hurled her aside like some minor inconvenience. Her head struck something solid, and she blacked out. Bright shapes punctuated the momentary darkness. Then, contorted in a corner of the room, she had an upside-down view of Showalter, his poncho twisted around his neck, crawling out from under Yintal and drawing a small blaster from a shoulder holster. From a prone position, and careful to miss Mobvikar, who had been driven to the floor, the major fired, catching the Yuuzhan Vong between the shoulder blades. Smell of ozone and burned flesh mingled in the air, but the assassin barely reacted. Showalter fired again, catching the Yuuzhan Vong in the back of the neck and setting his hair on fire. Showalter fired a final time. The assassin stiffened and crumpled to the floor in a scorched heap, his left hand still clasped on Aelan's throat. Bleeding from her nose and eyes, the priestess pried open his thick fingers and slid down the wall, gasping for air. Gracelessly, Kalenda somersaulted and was bellying forward to help Aelan when the hut was rocked by a powerful explosion. Showalter's comlink chimed, and he fumbled it out of his pocket.
"Yuuzhan Vong coral skippers," someone reported over the link. "Maybe half a dozen. Executing strafing runs over a new Nistao. Soothfast has been alerted. Starfighters are on their way."
Showalter clamped his hand around Kalenda's forearm.
"Move her into the hardened area," he rasped, coughing up blood. "Now!"
At the cold edge of the star system in which Wayland orbited, a solitary Yuuzhan Vong gunboat lurked. On the bridge, Noma Nor stood before a visual field fashioned by distant signal villips. Observing coral skippers and New Republic starfighters exchanging fire in the skies over New Nistao.
"Don't try too hard," he said aloud to the pilots who manned the coral skippers. "Just enough to convince them."